You're listening to The Real Short Box, a comic book podcast made for geeks by geeks.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in and listening to The Real Short Box. My name is Donald.
And I'm Darren.
And we are here today. We're going to basically be supercharged with some T-U-R-T-L-E power. Am I correct, Darren?
Yes, absolutely. Some very expensive turtle power.
Yes, we're going to be talking about Prospecting the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics. Is it worth it? And we're going to break that down and get into that a little more here. But to start out, I kind of wanted to talk just about the turtles in general. I think that would be a nice way to start this out, if I am correct. Darren, correct me if I'm wrong on this one, but the turtles, they first appeared in 1984. They were created by Mirage Studios by Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird. And Mirage Studios was started out in Dover, New Hampshire.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, kind of crazy, huh?
It's very crazy. There's not a lot of action typically in New Hampshire. No offense to our New Hampshire audience, but I don't know how many famous artists come from New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm. Now, basically, they did it to, they intended to parody four of the most popular comics at the time, which was Marvel's Daredevil and the New Mutants, Dave Sims' Cerebus, and Frank Miller's Ronin. So that's kind of where they came up with the idea. They said everybody's either a mutant, a ninja, or a teenager, or, you know, some type of weird animal, which makes sense because Cerebus was an aardvark. Ronin had a lot to do with samurai stuff and ninja things. And Daredevil had ninjas in it at the time. And of course, with the New Mutants, they were teenagers. So hence, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And that's kind of a cool little concept that they came up with in 1984, a long, long time ago. I don't want to age myself, but I was very young when this came out, and for me to have had a first print of the first issue at a very young age would have been extremely hard.
I think something that really, and we'll get like heavily into the value here in a second of what this really goes for. But like, I think people don't know, like, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but this was a supremely limited run, this first print. You know,
yes.
I mean, when you consider the second print of this, I mean, by all available data that we have, you have second prints of this basically that are being measured out at roughly 15 grand. Okay, that's mm-hmm. just for a second print. That should tell you, like, the first print, I mean, is just extraordinarily rare. And, you know, you could very realistically, you know, find first prints for 75 grand.
Yeah. And
I don't even know if it's the popularity, Donald, to be perfectly honest with you. I think the rarity has way more to do with it. Just because that's kind of how collectibles go. You know, you obviously need something that's in demand. You need something that's in really good shape, but if it's rare, I mean, that's just like, that's the power there. That's the triforce of power, basically. So, yep. This kind of checks off all those boxes. And
you know that you've done really well, that you're extremely popular when your parody starts to get parodied.
Yes.
We had series that came out later after that called Adolescent Radioactive Black Belt Hamsters. Yes, that was a thing. Preteen Dirty Jean Kung Fu Kangaroos.
Wow.
Yeah, Dark Horse launched Boris the Bear. Then they would also be popping in like Cracked and Mad all the time. They had parodies on the Turtles back in the 90s.
Wow. I mean, that's kind of a mouthful right there. I mean, I'm just like, some of those things that you're saying, I'm just, the Sam Hell are they talking? Wow, that's something.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that the ownership rights is a little somewhat convoluted, but Viacom, aka CBS, kind of owns most of the rights now. the Turtles. I believe maybe all of them. I'm not 100%. I think it's, let me look here real quick. Various movie television. Let's see. Trying to see if there's a breakdown of the rights somewhere online. Yeah, okay, so Mirage retained copyright and trademark until 2009, and then the entire TMNT franchise was sold by Peter Laird to Viacom, later known as CBS, minus Volume 4 of the comic series, which Mirage indefinitely owns, which is interesting, to say the least. So yeah, basically Nickelodeon, a.k.a. Viacom CBS, completely owns the rights to the Turtles now. And they publish their comic books currently through IDW Comic Books, which has been hugely successful for both IDW and the Ninja Turtle franchise, to be honest. It's doing extremely well, and I'm extremely surprised at how well it's actually doing. They reprinted every single issue. They started their own, like, to pick up where it left off on the original Mirage series. And that's not to say that that the Turtles didn't have other comic book companies that tried it. You know, they had some crossovers in Dark Horse. They had brought back Mirage periodically. They had tested the waters at Image as well. And I believe there was one other company, if not two, that they went to comic book company-wise to try to get the comic book back out there into the hands of the fans, which I think was, you know, the full intent. They always want to have a comic book source going, and that's where we kind of come into the value of the Turtles, is that it's always going to be seen as a comic book property first, and then a television series, cartoon, movie series, you know, franchise, things like that, secondary, but very popular nonetheless. Let's talk about, when we're talking about investing in the Ninja Turtles, now we want to know, people want to know, well, should I invest in Ninja Turtles comic books? And the answer is maybe. And there's going to be a reason why. And Darren, if you could break it down as far as, like, it's going to be very hard to invest in the earlier Ninja Turtle works.
Right. So, like, I would give, you know, I think maybe is a good answer. I'm more in the category of yes, if you can do it.
Yeah.
So I don't see the value of these things going down, and it's mostly because of the rarity. And then, like, presumably speaking, I would have to say that over time, it's only going to become more rare. And more issues of it are going to get damaged. More issues of it are going to lose that 9.8 grade down to 9.6 and so on and so forth. So if you can get a good deal on it, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle number one, first print, and by a good deal, I mean, I'm talking like 30, 40 grand, which is a heck of a lot of money in my view. You should do it if you can. I don't know about the second prints. I feel like the second prints are not quite the first prints, and you're kind of rolling the dice on that one, to be honest with you. But, like,
I agree. I think the only one that's okay. So some of them are still going to retain their value when it comes to second prints, third prints, fourth prints, even fifth and sixth prints. The fifth print right now of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number one by Mirage Comics is at least a couple hundred dollars. Yeah, if $200 to $500 right now just for that fifth print.
Oh.
Yeah. So there's definitely a lot of money involved in these Turtle books. And like I was saying, the reason why I'm saying maybe, because I did say maybe you should invest in these, is you're gonna have to have a chunk of change to do some investment in. And in which case, I would say if you don't have a lot of money, about a year and a half ago, I would have said, look at Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Adventures number one, which is the Archie Comics published series. It had the first appearance of Rocksteady and Bebop.
Right.
And that one now is a $1,000 comic book. Oh. So just a year and a half maybe that went by, and that went from an $8 comic to a $1,000 comic book, which is insane if you think about it. It's the staying power of these characters that I think is very special. If you look at the fact that, for example, Thanos within the Marvel Universe, he appeared, he stayed for a while, and we're talking in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Okay. And then what happened to Thanos? Ultimately, he defeated. Yeah. You know, he was defeated, and he was put to bed, and now there's no real talk of Thanos anymore. So that book, it still has value, but it doesn't. And there's a reason why it still has value, because there's two other appearances within that book, Drax the Destroyer, and I believe his name is Star Fox. So, which is a really funny character, to be honest. He has a sexual magnetism that people can't resist. That's his power. It's like a pheromone power. But anyway, I digress. That book maintained some of its value because it still has a couple more first appearances and because Thanos was a very popular character. But if you look at other past villains within the Marvel Cinematic Universe, not all of them do as well. Some of them that have done decent, of course, would be Loki, because Loki keeps appearing. Loki's the god of mischief, and Tom Hiddleston loves playing the character. Now, Kang the Conqueror, who's going to be the next new baddie within the Marvel Universe, he's a time traveler, so that one's going to be a little more difficult. It's already a $6,000 to $10,000 comic book, his first appearance, which is insane. It's an early Avengers issue. I think it's either 8 or 9. I think it's issue 8 is the first Kang of Avengers. Okay. And you're looking at that, and you're wondering, well, you know, what does that have to do with anything? Well, when characters like Doctor Doom and Loki arrive within the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they're a villain that you can't define the heroes without. You can't have Thor without Loki. You can't sure. have Fantastic Four without Doom. And Doom is all widespread, you know. And you think, well, you can't have Thanos without... really isn't anybody you can't have Thanos without. So some of these villains are tied so perfectly to the heroes that if as they're going to continue to have their staying power, they're going to stick around. And that's what I'm saying. With the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you're always going to have Rocksteady, you're always going to have Bebop, you're always going to have Shredder, and you're always going to have Kang or Krang. Those are the four big baddies in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle universe that are going to continuously stick around. First appearance of Shredder is, I believe, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number one. First appearance of Krang, geez, I'm going to keep doing that this whole time. Krang is, I think it's issue 6 or 7, if I recall. Okay. And then first appearance of Rocksteady and Bebop is actually that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Adventures, that Archie book. So what I would say is if you don't have a lot of money and you're going to invest in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics, you should look at the minor first appearances. And I mean minor in the most polite way, because even Casey Jones now, who first appeared in Raphael, number one, the one shot Raphael, even his appearance is now, I bought it at Comic-Con in San Diego a few years back for $80. It is now a $2,000 comic.
Yeah,
like $1,500 to $2,000, easy. And it's kind of crazy to think about, like how quickly this can happen. I think when I last looked, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Darren, that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 2 is still relatively obtainable.
It's hard to say. I mean, it depends what you really call obtainable. So, like, you're still in like the kind of like near 10,000. You know,
Now that's if we're talking like 9-8, you know, mint, you know, pretty much perfect. Right. I think if you looked at more like a 4-0 or a 5-0, and we're talking graded comics, if you're looking at that, and that's a low grade book, to be honest, a 4-0 or a 5-0 is pretty low grade. You're going to be looking at $400 to $500, I would imagine, somewhere around there. And that's where, you know, the thought comes in. Well, why do I want that? Well, that's the first appearance of April O'Neil and the first appearance of the Mausers, which were created to destroy the Ninja Turtles, so to speak, the robotic creatures that were set forth to destroy them. And they really still haven't done those. So I thought that concept could be pretty cool. And that idea, if they put it in a film, could be a really fun one. We've seen Krang. Already in the movies. And as fun as Krang is, those films were not their best films, I'm going to say. But Krang was still great in it, being who Krang is. So it's hard to mess up Krang. But April O'Neil and the Mausers, I think it's still a pretty good investment, and it's something that you can afford. If we're looking at a high-grade Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number one first print, goes for $80,000 to $100,000 now,
which
insane.
I've got a set here I'm finding on eBay, and you know, eBay, I think, will give you a very good estimate, but it certainly should not be taken as the final word on everything. The first four originals, all graded 9.4 or above, are $500,000.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. So, yeah, it just, you know, it is what it is. But, I mean, it's weird, Donald, because, like, I know that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles keeps releasing, you know, new material or new variants or re-releasing. So, like, you know that the popularity is there. Or are they maybe just suckering you? You know what I mean? Because it's like, it's hard to resist. I understand. Like, it's hard to resist a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles book because you know what some of these are absolutely worth. And every once in a blue moon, you get something like a Raphael number one that's really valuable. But, like, do you continue to do it? I don't know. Like, I feel like there's better choices for you out there. I don't think this is, like, a massive return on investment at this point. Only unless you're buying, like, the very old originals, and they're in really good condition, they're just going to go up in value by default.
Yeah, I could agree there. They will go up in value by default. And just as everything ages, they'll go up. They'll mature in value. They'll continue to climb slowly but surely. And when there is a mention of a show or a series or anything, they'll spike more. And then it'll start to come down a little bit, but it'll still be up higher than it was originally. And that's just the way comic books go, particularly with big seminal characters like the Turtles, like Leonardo, Donatello, Raphael, Michelangelo, Splinter, Shredder, you know, all these characters are so hugely popular. But there's things still that you can do. For example, first appearance of Jenica, which is a IDW Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comic. That one can still be obtained relatively easily. It's like $100. I think you can get a really fine grade of Jenica in comic book form. And I don't think Jenica's actually been introduced into the film universe, or I don't even know if she'd been introduced in the animated universe. But she made her first appearance in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or TMNT number 51 as a human, and then was changed into a Ninja Turtle after that, because I think it might have had to do with some type of a blood transfusion that she received, if I recall, from the Turtles. And that was in issue 95 where that happened. She received a blood transfusion by one of the Ninja Turtles, and the mutated blood transformed her into a turtle. So that's kind of an interesting thing. So yeah, for about $100 to $150, you can get her first appearance as a turtle, which is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 95. Or I believe it's a little bit lower. You can get issue 51, which is her as herself, as a human before she's turned. And that's a concept that they didn't really experiment with until this IDW series. Another one is Toka and Rezar. They appear in the IDW series, and so on and so on and so on. There's other characters that can become major characters down the line that you might want to look investing in, rather than going, okay, well, I need to go with, you know, it's like looking at the new Avengers and knowing that Disney is going to do a Disney Plus series of those characters and collecting each of their first appearances, you know, which for most of them is new Avengers title. So you have to look at that and you have to think, well, what does my don't live outside your means when it comes to comic book investing. Don't buy something and take out a loan in order to purchase it, hoping that it's going to give you returns, because it might not. And that's the risk, particularly with an independent series like this that really doesn't have, it has a home with Paramount now because Paramount's Viacom, CBS, you know, so the Ninja Turtles movies are going to be Paramount films. It's just the way it is. But it's not like in-house, kind of like it was with the MCU, you know, or DC and stuff, where they have this factory where they can keep churning out new characters because they have a whole stable of them. The Turtles is just one idea, and they haven't built really upon that universe as much as they could have or should have to build out their comic book world, in which case then they can branch out into more films and more series.
Right. Well, I feel like I'm looking at the time. Correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like we're in that kind of vicinity that we should wrap this up shortly. Am I correct or am I just...
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I think we kind of said what we wanted to say. When it comes to the Turtles, should you invest? If you have the money, absolutely. Invest in the older books in issue 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Those are the big guns. Those are the big issues that you always want to look for in investing purposes. Of course, always issue 1 is going to be great. Now, somebody would say, they would ask, well, should I get an issue 1 first print, or should I get issue 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 in first print form, and get like a fifth print of issue 1? That is completely up to you. All of those prints are desirable for the issue 1, but the most coveted, of course, is going to be Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 1. Originally, it was Gobbledygook, which is where they made their first technical appearance. If you're not talking about the Amazing Superhero magazine that had the Ninja Turtles, all of them first appeared in an ad, but Gobbledygook was so easy to make a what would you call it, a knockoff of, that they stopped qualifying that as the true first appearance, and it's now back to being Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 1. So if you're a purist and you want the true first appearance, get the first print of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 1, specifically if you just ran into a lot of money and you don't know what to do with it. That's a good investment, very solid. If not, get yourself an issue 2. That's a first April O'Neil, first Mausers. It's still relatively obtainable. If not, then you might want to look at some of these IDW issues that we're talking about. First Jenica, first Toka, first Razor, things like that, that you can invest in as well. And that's a more long-term investment. Sure, you have to sit on it a little while longer, but it might give you some nice returns. So it's just going to depend really on your pocketbook.
Yeah. Well, anyway, folks, I want to thank you all for coming in. Obviously, we came, we saw, we kicked its ass in a small period of time. So, Donald, thanks a lot. I can't wait till our next recording.
Yeah. And of course, thanks to our sponsor, Splattered Frog Brewing Company there. And thanks to Half's Hot Sauce. We also want to mention that you can find us. We do live podcasts on YouTube under the Rumblespoon Productions, who helps produce these podcasts. And you can also find us on Spotify, Darren's favorite, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Google, and a whole host of others. Thanks again for tuning in, everybody. Thanks, Darren, for being on, as always. And thank you to the audience. If we don't see you out and about anytime soon, perhaps we will see you
at the comic shop.
Yeah. Have a good night, everybody.
This has been The Real Short Box. We'll see you at the comic shop. Thanks for listening.